appreciate everyone that is here this morning. We've got several visitors in the audience, and we appreciate you being here. For those of us that are regular members, make sure you mark your calendar for, I believe it is September the 9th. It is the Saturday after Labor Day. We will be having our tent meeting that will not be in the tent, but will be indoors, because the topic will be on teaching through song. And it will be geared at understanding from someone who has a musical degree and who is a gospel preacher, someone who I believe effectively teaches through song. And they will be talking about some of the hymns that they've written. So we'll get to ask questions about hymn writing. We'll get to ask questions about, there will be a session called Worship Killers, about how, what we can do in leading worship that will kill in that. On the Sunday morning, the class will be geared towards song leaders in particular, but for everyone that sings and participates. Sunday morning will be about how we are priests offering worship to God and the importance of that in regards to song. And then I think Sunday night will be about different versions of hymns in the books based on words and music and all those things, why some books have certain words and other books have certain phrases, and kind of dealing with some of those things about, should we even sing every word of every song? Is every phrase a good one to sing? So it'll be interesting in that regard. So again, mark that calendar for the Saturday after Labor Day. Now, we'll get to 1 Corinthians chapter 7 in a moment. So if you'll open up to 1 Corinthians chapter 7, that will be our first text. And I've got a little longer introduction today than normal and a little shorter end than normal. So don't get freaked out when I don't get to, because I only have 2 points this morning. So don't get freaked out that I'm not there until I get there. So I just want you to understand that. So there's a coach in Oklahoma State, a football coach, that became very famous a few years ago for a soundbite of his. One of his players had been grilled in the newspaper. And you can see that he's holding this newspaper up. And he is incredibly angry at the reporter because the reporter went after his quarterback. And in the middle of his rant of grilling this reporter, he says, "I'm a man," and his reason for being a man we don't think about. He says, "I'm a man, I'm 40. And everyone kind of goofed off and make fun of him. Well, how many of us have had the moment where you say, "I'm a man," in my case, I'm 34. "I'm a man, I'm a woman, I'm 18 years old." We don't verbalize that, but you know what we think? We are. And what he was saying, this is a 20-year-old kid, come after me. I'm a grown man. If you got a problem with how the team is going, you talk to me, a man, and not that boy. And I think sometimes we all feel that we are an adult. Well, not only am I a man because I'm 34, I'm now a man because I'm married. Like, that is like next stepping stone, right? I'm married. Oh. And we talk about transitions, and I've got to tell you that the week of July the 9th through July the 22nd, was a moment for me that was like a ton of bricks. I thought I was a man. I thought I was an adult, right? Let's go conservatively. Got out of college at 22. Here we are, 34. I would say I'm a man. I've had adult life. And then July 9th to July 22nd happened, and I realized a passage that I read many times before I got married, a passage I had taught many times before I got married, a passage I had even considered even after we got married, and Morrow and I were talking one day, and he referenced this, and maybe it's because it was coming out of somebody else's mouth, it hit me like a ton of bricks. And the passage is 1 Corinthians chapter 7 and verse 32, when Paul says, "But I want you to be free from concern. The one who is unmarried is concerned about the things of the Lord, that he may please the Lord. the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how he may please his wife, and his interest or his things are divided. And the woman who is unmarried, the virgin, she is concerned about the things of the Lord, that she may be both holy in body and spirit. But the one who is married is concerned about the things of the world, how she may please her husband. How many times had I been taught that? And then July 9th to July 22nd was, whoa. You don't know what that was. I went to Denver for a new job and training in Denver, Colorado on July the 9th. I was out there for a week, 4 days. It was awesome. Great training. I was separated from the wife and the sons. It was kind of the first time I had been away from all family. Because the only other business trip I've been on since we've been married was I was in Alabama where family is. This one I was completely away from all family. And it was all you could think about was, how is everybody back home? You're thinking about those things. While you're thinking, man, I still got to do this. I still got to do that. There's all these different things. Then I got back home and started out in the field. And it was described to me as it was going to be a 9-to-5 job. Great. Well, it turns out it wasn't 9-to-5. It was you're in the field from 9, really more like 8:30, to like 5:36. And then you had to actually do preparation work before you went out. So it was more like 6:30 to 8. And then an hour commute. My wife was miserable. Noah was miserable. I was miserable. That was all there was to it. And before, I never had to consider those other things. I could have gone through and kept trudging through a miserable job because I was getting paid a lot more than what I should have been getting paid to do what I did. Now I understand why the pay was what it was. What are you talking about, Wes? My wife sits me down and she's like, what are you going to do? You should quit. I'm not used to that. That is new to me. That somebody else gets any say at all in my life and I have to please them. That was, as we're going through it, as I'm giving my review here for the year, was to the, what was it, 7 men that were here for that meeting? How you all understood I was right in the middle of that. And how it was the most trying week of my adult life. I thought I was a man. But I was like, this is something different. Well, so I thought, well, how do I illustrate that? I was thinking about before I got married, right? Very limited things. I could have put 3 TVs up there, but that's included in sports. You got work, you got God, you got dinner. Which is the reason why I put dinner instead of eating is because I'm always asking Rachel what's for dinner. And she's like, I don't know how I got there yet. So I got food on the brain. Are my clothes clean, which was lumped into one day because I didn't have a washing machine in the apartment, and running. Those were all the responsibilities that I had. So I was pretty easy to do them all. You could sit there and you could reach pretty much all of them at any point. Well, flash forward to now we're married. Now we got wife, got sons. We added dogs, but there were cats already. You still have food. You still have laundry. You still have all the other things you want to do. And now to get to those things, now not only do you have God that you're trying to please, you now have to try to please your wife and be a good husband at all times. Well, I still want to run. I still want to work, right? And so I got to shift around and change my direction a little bit. And then, well, you know what? I still have to run 7 days a week. So now I've got a balancing act here, and I can balance pretty good. Y'all can see that. I work on that so I can balance. But man, all these other things are being neglected. And so now you got to want to do work. You got to be a dad. You got to do all these things. And I honestly had not even considered this until I put this illustration together. When you take the final shot of both of those, you'll notice one looks like he's falling, and the other looks like he's sitting at a desk where he is an operator and he can move all of the things and cover everything that he needs to do because he's stable. But instead, now you... That hit me like a ton of bricks. So when I was out there for training, I was asked this question. Well, how do you come up with your sermons? I said, oftentimes it's what I'm going through or what I'm thinking about or what I'm teaching people privately. I hope what I'm teaching you this morning, as I am attempting to find balance in my life, is something that is going to be beneficial to you in whatever you're going through. And the two things that I want to emphasize this morning is that I'm trying to remember Jesus. Someone pulled me aside a few weeks ago when we had a study in this office. They were so focused on something that was so far ahead. And so I was like, do you remember what Jesus said about this? And you turn to Matthew chapter 6, the passage that Evertson just read for us, that most of us can quote by heart. And we sing, seek ye first the kingdom of God and His righteousness, right? We remember that whole context of things. Don't store up for yourselves treasures on earth where moth and rust and thieves and all those different things. And don't worry about what you're going to put on. Don't worry about what you're going to wear. Because don't the lilies of the field, doesn't God clothe them? More so than Solomon in all of his glory. And don't the Gentiles, the people that you think are awful individuals, don't they also need clothes? Don't they also need food? And who gives to them? God. Do you think He doesn't care more about you than those birds, than those plants, than those non-God-fearing Gentiles? Yep. And He says, is your life not more than clothing? There's no amount of money that was going to keep me going through that as our lives were miserable. There is more to life than that. So you know what she told me she wanted me to do? I want you to focus on your preaching and your teaching. Seek ye first the kingdom of God and His. You know how easy it was to write that letter of resignation when you know they got your back? It's so much easier than, I don't know what my wife is going to think about this, or I don't know what they're going to think about this move. But when you know the support is there, it's easy to write that letter. It was easy to make that because life is more than clothing. We will figure this out, but we don't want to move from that. But then, that's not what really 1 Corinthians 7 is talking about. That's just some of the additional interest. But then I have to remember Jesus' teaching that was not so much verbal of Jesus' teaching, but the way in which He taught in His life. Consider Ephesians, the 5th chapter. Again, passages that we talk about so frequently in preparation of marriage, in teaching about marriage, in teaching about the church, in all of these things. And what I have to remember is my job is to please my wife like Christ pleased and loved the church. And so, verse 25, right? Husbands, love your wives as Christ loved the church and gave Himself up for her. Wes, are you sacrificing like Christ in this? It's not about you anymore being able to watch every sports that you want to watch or run every mile that you want to run. There are things that you're going to have to do. You're going to have to give up for her. And why did He do it? That He might sanctify her, the church, might set her apart, having cleansed her by the washing of the Word, the water with the Word, so that He might present the church to Himself in splendor without spot or wrinkle or any such thing, that she might be holy and blameless and without blemish. Imagine if Christ hadn't gone through everything He did for us to the point of Eddie this morning. We'd still be dirty individuals. But yet He got down and He got dirty and He washed us. Just like we do with those dogs that are starting to drive me nuts. They stink. But the other day I was willing to get down on my hands and my knees and wash them in the bathtub because I didn't want them to stink anymore. And there's kind of a weird relationship about that. I never thought I would be doing such things. But here I am. Because there are other things that are involved. And so 28, in the same way husbands should love their wives as their own body, as their own bodies, and he who loves his wife loves himself. There have been a lot of us that have gotten married in the last year and a half. How many of us have learned, well, 2 years really, how many of us have been learning that lesson the hard way, husbands? Right? Especially when you've been an adult your entire life and you've only had to please yourself. It's a different world. But not only do I remember his teaching, I remember his moments. Do you think Jesus had these moments where his interests were divided? Where he had the things of human nature and the things that needed to be done, but yet there were spiritual things that needed to be done. This contrast of 1 Corinthians 7. I want you to think about one of the moments in Mark the 3rd chapter. This is the one that I always think about. And we talk about it from Mark the 3rd chapter in verse 31. That Jesus had been teaching and his mother and his brothers came, verse 31. And they were standing outside. Well, that just seems crazy, doesn't it? Mom and brothers shut out of the son's teaching. But they stood outside and they called to him. And the crowd was sitting around him and they said, "Your mother and your brothers are outside seeking you." And he said, "Who are my mother and my brother?" And looking at those that sat around him, not those that were outside the house, but those that sat around him, "Here are my mother and my brother. For whoever does the will of God, he is my brother and sister and mother." Man, those are some tough words. You say, what does that have to do with his interest being divided? I want you to see why his mother and his brothers were there. Go back to verse 20. It seemed as though his mother and his brothers came, because then when he went home with his disciples, the crowd gathered again so that they could not even eat. And when his family heard it, they went out to seize him, for they were saying, "He is out of his mind." You see what was going on? His parents, his mother, and his brothers are saying, "He's got to eat. If he doesn't eat, he's going to die." And Jesus is saying, "If I don't teach these people, I'm going to die." This is the most important. But do you think he wasn't hungry? Man, we got to the end of the 40 days and his temptations, right? It wouldn't have been a temptation to turn the stones to bread if he wasn't hungry. They couldn't eat. So there's another situation in which they couldn't eat. You can look at it from Mark, but we will look at it let's just look at it from Mark. Look in chapter 8. I couldn't remember if I decided to do that. Mark chapter 6, excuse me. Couldn't remember if I used Mark 6 or John 6. But the disciples had just gone out, the 12 had just gone out, and they had had all the ability to perform all these miracles and to do things that they had seen Jesus do. But now they've been sent out two by two, and they've now come back. And they're all excited about this. But in that meantime, John the Baptist has been beheaded. John the Baptist has died. And so verse 30, the apostles returned to Jesus, and they told him all that they had done and taught. And so he said to them, "Come away by yourselves to a desolate place and rest for a while. You've worked. It's time to go off. For many were coming and going, and they had no leisure even to eat." And so they went away in a boat to a desolate place by themselves. Key words there, desolate and by themselves. "Now many saw them going and recognized them, and they ran there on foot from all the towns got there ahead of him. How frustrating must that have been? You think you're getting away from everyone. You need a little decompression time. You need some time to just eat a meal. And everyone recognizes you and they go ahead of you. They're not walking, they're running on foot. So when Jesus, when he went ashore, he saw a great crowd and he had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. And he began to teach them many things. And when it grew late, his disciples came to him and said, "This is a desolate place, and the hour is late. Send them away to the surrounding countryside and villages, and that they may buy themselves something to eat." And you know the story, right? You give them something to eat. And how? Philip said, "How much do you have?" "Well, we got a boy here who's got 5 loaves and 2 fish. What was their whole purpose again? Getting away from everyone so that they could eat. What did they have? 5 loaves and 2 fish with the little boy. Did they even have any food when they left, apparently? No. Don't you think that would have been pretty important? Yep. But Jesus said, what is more important right now is that I teach these people. That is unbelievable to me. You think he wasn't worried about his disciples? Yeah, he was. The next day, when the crowds come wanting to make him king after he feeds them, right? He says to his disciples, "Do you also want to go away? Lord, to whom shall we go? You have the words of eternal life." They understood it too. Their interests were not, "See, we have left all to follow you," Peter would say in Luke the 18th chapter. "We've left it all." Their interests were solely on Jesus. But do you remember what happened when Peter's mother-in-law was sick? What did he beg Jesus? "Can you make her better?" And you know what Jesus did? He made her better. And when Jesus was on the cross and his mother stood nearby as we sing, what did he say? "Woman, behold your son," pointing to John, "and son, behold your mother." He still cared about it, but there was always where the correct focus and interest was. That is such a tough balance to find. But maybe the moment where Jesus had the most trouble balancing his interests in life, and I'm sure you can know exactly where I'm going with this, right? How about when he was actually dealing with the reality of the cross? You go to Luke 22. Eddie and I didn't work this out, but it works out perfectly. God always knew that his son was going to die. The son always knew that he was going to die. But did that change the prayer of the son in the garden? "Father, if there's any other way, let this cup pass from me." Do you understand that division of interest? He really wants to please his father and do the right thing and save us. But yet, he really doesn't want to die. And so he's torn. But you know what wins out every time? "My food," as he says in John, "is to do the will of him who sent me." And as it goes there in Luke chapter 22 and verse 42, "Father, if you are willing..." Notice what he calls this. "Remove this cup from him." It's something that he was going to have to drink and take in. "Nevertheless, not my will, but yours be done." And there appeared to him an angel from heaven strengthening him. Because you know who couldn't strengthen him? his disciples. As they were spiritually willing, but their interests were still on the flesh. They were tired and they kept falling asleep. The only ones that could help them were these angels. And so verse 44, he being in an agony, prayed more earnestly. And his sweat became like drops of blood. Michael preached on this not too long ago, but I'll emphasize it again. It didn't become blood. It became like blood. That is some serious stress in division. But what did he do? Verse 45, when he rose from prayer, he came down to the disciples and he found them sleeping from sorrow. You think they're more sorrowful than he was? He's clearly more sorrowful. And what did he say? Why are you sleeping? Rise and pray that you may not enter into temptation. Man, it makes me feel better knowing that Jesus was torn. It makes me feel better that, as the book of Hebrews says, that we have a high priest who can sympathize with our weaknesses. That was tempted in every way such as we are, yet without sin. There are some days that I put myself ahead of my wife and my son. And you know who I'm not being? Like Jesus. There are other days where I do the thing I should. Well, how amazing is it that Jesus did the right thing every single day? That is a standard to which we cannot attain, but to which we have been called to attain. As Eddie referenced there in Ephesians chapter 1, He chose us in Him that we might be blameless and without spot. That's what He's calling me to do. Am I so divided and saw all over the place that I forget where the focuses really are? That's a hard thing to find. But please remember Jesus and the things that He taught. And remember, Jesus is not unlike you. And He is not unlike me. He was like us in every single way. I wish I had more practical advice. The only practical advice I really have is talk to some people that have been through this before. It's a great resource. In fact, it might be the best resource. That's the one that I've used the most. Secondly, use people who are going through that. Not necessarily the best resource. And here's an illustration why. Imagine you have two people struggling with the same sin, right? It's good that we can relate that we are struggling with the same sin. But you know where we're both at? Struggling, drowning in that same sin. But if we got somebody that has been through that and is there already, they can tell us how they got through. Use both. They are there at our disposal, and pray to the one who can sympathize with our weaknesses and give us grace and mercy in time of need. This morning, maybe you're ready to make Christ your entire interest. To be joined to Christ. To be buried into Christ for the forgiveness of your sins. Maybe you're ready for that this morning. Or maybe you need the prayers of the congregation here. Why don't you come now as we stand and as we sing.